Hi, welcome to another Writers After Dark. I'm Summer Brooks, and we're here because good stories start with the writers, since wherever there's a story, someone's either making it up or writing it down. And my guest today is horror, sci-fi, fantasy, anything that fires the imagination story author Christina Henry. Hi, Christina.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Now, I've seen fairy tale adaptations, fantasy stories, and your newest story is The Ghost Tree, which is an original horror story that's, for people who like horror tales, this one's really good. Where do you get the inspiration for which story you want to write next? Because that's a very, very broad palette, and I am happy and impressed.
So when I was a kid, I was much, much more of a fantasy reader. And I didn't become interested in horror until I was a little bit older. And that was mostly because I was a very, very credulous reader when I was a kid. So I believed whatever was in the book or in the movie, I believed that was real. So when you have a super overactive imagination like that, horror is a little bit too intense for you at that age. You know, I like to say that, like, I grew up in the Shire, I got lost in Neverland, I found myself on Elm Street, and I settled in Derry, Maine. So I definitely sort of ran the gamut, but I came into horror sort of sideways from fantasy as a reader. So when I was, I want to say that the book came out when I was 13 or 14, The Eyes of the Dragon by Stephen King, and that was a fantasy novel. And I had not read anything by Stephen King at that point, but I loved fantasy, and I would just sort of read anything that was fantasy. And I loved that book, and I was like, okay, well, I can handle this. His other books are probably okay. So I read Christine. And, of course, that is definitely a horror novel, and it's very, very intense. And I remember reading it sort of with this intensity, like I couldn't put the book down because something would happen to me if I put it down before I finished the book. So I remember kind of starting it and then staying up until 1 a.m. just so I could get through the whole thing, because it was almost like if I put it down, I'd be afraid to pick it up again the next day. But I became sort of addicted to that feeling, and then I just kept going back and reading more Stephen King books, and then sort of branching out into other horror from there. So I think that my writing and in a lot of ways reflects that, you know, sort of the variety of things that I've liked to read over the years. And the Ghost Tree in particular is a reflection of a lot of my obsessions, I think. Obviously, it's a horror novel. It's a coming-of-age story. It's got a sort of a central mystery. I always loved mysteries when I was young. I read a lot of Trixie Belden, a lot of Nancy Drew. It has some fantasy elements in it. I loved Ray Bradbury's Something Wicked This Way Comes, so I felt compelled to put a fair in this book. So there's a lot of, I think, a lot of reflection of my interests and obsessions in Ghost Tree.
Okay. Well, we should tell people that Ghost Tree is about a small town about an hour or so outside of Chicago that has a long-storied secret dark history with disappearing girls. And I don't want to say too much more, but there's a monster in the woods, and it has a taste for girls wandering through the woods, and the story around this mystery was not one that I expected, and I am so delighted at where, I'm not going to spoil it because it's too good, where the mystery leads. And This is one of those stories where I did stay up a little too late a couple of nights reading it. And additionally, discovered the true dangers of reading ebooks versus regular books, because when you doze off, the regular books don't hurt when they bounce off your forehead. Oh my goodness. But yeah, this story was just so intriguing, and it literally dragged me along chapter after chapter after chapter. And talk a little bit about the type of protagonist you wanted in this story, because you mentioned Trixie Belden and all of the teenage girl hero investigators, because that was, that's a story genre all of its own that people can't get enough of.
There were a lot of those kinds of stories, where girls were investigating mysteries, say, when I was growing up. But in horror specifically, there's not as many girls coming of age stories. There's a lot of boys coming of age, and there's a lot of, kind of classic examples that you can think of. One of them is actually Something Wicked This Way Comes. It, although there is a female character in the group of friends, it's essentially a boy's story, and you can go on like Boy's Life, right? Summer of Night. If you look at horror genre, there's just been this idea that coming of age stories are about boys. And I wanted very much to write a story that was about girls, but also I get very frustrated by the idea that men's experiences are universal and that women's experiences are female specific. So I wanted to write a story that I hope would appeal to all readers and that would not just be like, this is a story for girls to read,
Yeah, that little habit of centering only one type of hero, one type of hero for a certain type of story, a different type of hero for a different type of story. I guess pigeonholing what kind of stories go where. And I've always understood that there needed to be some sort of categorization because bookstore shelves need to know what section to put the books in so people can find the books. But at some point, that becomes a hurdle rather than helpful. And I have no idea how to get over that. In this story, I would actually have a hard time pigeonholing it because it's not just a horror. It really is an exploration of the, shall we say, emotional and hormonal upheaval girls go through. And it's actually refreshing to see a lot of that taken seriously and not just dismissed as, oh, it's hormones. Oh, she's just going through that time. I'm like, really? You're just gonna dismiss that?
There's one of the things I was trying to get at with the central relationship of the book. So Lauren and Miranda, who are both point of view characters in the book, is this thing that a lot of girls' friendships go through, and they don't always kind of make it through. Where you're friends with somebody from when you're very small, and then you become a teenager, and there sort of becomes this sort of differing levels of maturity, where one girl is sort of ready to move ahead, ready to become a woman, and the other one still wants to be a girl, still wants to be a child. And sometimes girls' friendships sort of survive that, that rockiness, and they make it through to adulthood. But I think fairly often there's a feeling that, you've sort of outgrown each other as friends. And I really wanted to address that. And I think that boys go through this too, but there might not, there's such a mythology around boys' friendships, especially in novels, you know, like there are these great long-lasting lifelong bonds. But I think a lot of boys go through the same thing where, you know, you just sort of outgrow people and you meet other people at different stages of life. And, you know, so I wanted to dig into that a little bit, sort of like this romanticizing, this mythologizing we do about friendships and about the way that girls interact with each other, especially at this sort of very difficult stage of your life where, you know, everybody's sort of transitioning to adulthood at a different pace.
I'm waiting for someone to take the scenario of where the girls are maturing and that they're jockeying for position in the clique that they're forming as they get older, and watching one girl be shoved aside to be the follower while another one elbows her way to the top to be the queen bee of the clique. I'm like, that's a wolf pack story right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely ripe for metaphor, right? To turn that into something else for sure.
So, and yeah, that just the detail in where you're differentiating that these two girls have known each other since they were little, but they are discovering their own tastes and interests in music and entertainment, and it's harder for them to still keep following these paths together because they have completely different interests. And the amount of attention paid to how hard that is, it's like, well, do I give up what I'm interested in just to still be her friend? There's some emotional difficulty in trying to figure out, do I be me or do I be what she wants me to be to stay friends?
Right. And it's really too, it's coming at a time when you really don't know who you are anyway. You know, you're trying to figure, it's not just do I pretend to like her thing or pretend to be interested in this because I want to stay friends. It's also, you know, you feel like you're changing and you want to sort of expand and grow, and in some ways teenage girls are the worst because they really feel that at whatever stage they're at, a lot of times they'll project sort of this absolute confidence in, like, this is the way this is. You know, this is the thing that I like, and so therefore this is the best thing. And when you have a personality for, you know, in a relationship where, like, the character of Lauren is trying, she's sort of holding on to the memory of what their relationship used to be. But she's examining the relationship and saying, you know, this is not where I'm at. You know, Miranda wants X and I want Y. But Miranda, in some ways, thinks everything is fine. You know, she doesn't think that their relationship has changed. You know, she's like, I'm interested in this. Of course, Lauren is also interested in this because we're best friends. So I think, too, the contrast between the two girls and the way Lauren is examining much more, you know, is this relationship still valuable? And that's such a hard thing. You know, it's such a hard thing to let someone go because you've had this long connection, but sometimes that's what you need to do. Sometimes you need to let that person go.
Now, if you can, talk about the magic and the monster without going into spoiler territory.
I don't know if I
Yeah,
can
no, I'm
really.
sitting here going, I can't think of a way in. Maybe she can.
Yeah, I think that probably it's just sufficient to say that there is magic and that there is a monster, but I think the unfolding of that is definitely part of the narrative and story. So I don't want to spoil.
What I liked was how that there was a myth beneath it that encompasses the history of the town, and how everybody knows it but isn't really sure that they know it, and that just made it all delightful because you have people going, well, wait a minute, this was, oh yeah, never mind, and that was very powerful because there is something to be examined in the collective amnesia or collective hysteria of a group of people who are, always together. Everybody's grown up together, everybody knows everybody. Everybody assumes certain things will be common. There will be a common thread because, hey, this is our town. We're all the same. And really, you're not, but you hold on to that assumption because you want to belong. And just how that's played with really got to me.
Well, and I think one of the things too is there's nine point of view characters in this book. So you're really seeing the town from a lot of different ways, So you're sort of seeing it from the point of view of the mayor, who's the son of the previous mayor, who has, this sort of long-standing entrenchment in the town. You're seeing it from the point of view of Lauren and Miranda, who are these girls going through these different changes. You're seeing it from the point of view of Alex, who's a police officer whose family's new in town. So he's really comes in with an outsider perspective in more than one way, which is highlighted with his relationship with the terrible woman across the street. And we also see her point of view. So one of the things I wanted to get at too is this idea of sort of how a bunch of different people can see the same scenario, can sort of see the trigger in the story, and it's not a spoiler, is that there's two girls that are murdered, and the way the various characters kind of circle around that inciting incident, I think, is where the interest was for me in the story, was sort of how everybody sees something different in this crime.
Yeah, it's sort of like, I don't want to put labels on the story because it definitely has its own flavor, but it reminded me a little bit, you've got Incident on Mulberry Street from the old Twilight Zone, plus a little bit of Rashomon going on.
Oh yeah. I love Rashomon, so I definitely can see how that might have crept in.
But the was there a particular inspiration for building the myth around the town's history?
Well, I mean, I always say that I don't sound like a real writer because I don't have like plot and plan the way normal writers do. The genesis, a lot of my stories comes from virtually nothing. So in the case of this story, about 2 or 3 years before I wrote the book, I wrote a line in one of my notebooks, and it was just said, "Meet me by the old ghost tree." That was it. Meet me by the old ghost tree. And then I decided to write a book around this statement. And I write chronologically and I don't plot. So
Wow.
the way that I write, I just sort of start going and see where it goes. And a lot of the things that happen in a story come from the character's decision making. I think that's really true ghost tree. So a lot of the kind of twists and turns of the plots will occur to me as I'm writing, or sometimes they even surprise me because I haven't really thought about it in a conscious way. And I always feel like when I try to describe this process, it makes my process sound like magic, but it's not. It's just that I really let my subconscious do a lot of the work for me, and then I kind of discover the story as I'm writing. Because for me, the interest is finding the story the same way a reader would.
So you've just described your process as a linear pantser.
Yeah, basically.
How hard is it to, as you're going along making up the story, how hard is it to not go back and tweak things until you're done? Or do you go back and rewrite while you're still getting to the end?
So I write by hand in a notebook, and about every 50 pages or so, because I'm worried about losing the notebook, I put the stuff into the Word document. So as I'm doing that, I'm usually tweaking. You know, it's like I'm editing as I go, so that when I get done with the typed draft, it's basically done. You know, I don't like draft and redraft and like go through a multiple drafting process. I sort of fill in or like tweak things as I'm doing that, you know, word processing. So I've usually, when I hand it in, it's like 95% done.
So do you take some time in between like finishing your handwritten section and typing it in to just sort of let it percolate before you start typing it in? Or do you do that after you type it in?
No, there's not a lot of conscious percolating. There's definitely a lot of, you know, just sort of follow your first instinct and see where it leads. You know, and it really one of the reasons why I write this way was sort of self-defensive, because I had a young son and he wasn't napping anymore, and my second book, Black Knight, was under contract, and I still had to figure out a way to write the book. So I went to the park with him and like put him in the sandbox, and I would sit on a bench right by hand and then type it up, you know, when I had a chance to. And one of the things I realized was that it was really helpful for me, because writing by hand in itself is a little bit more meditative. You know, a lot of times I'll just take a second before I start writing the next sentence. You know, it's slower, it's like a more deliberate process. So I feel like in some way the writing that's getting down on the page is really what I intend. Whereas when you're typing, you know, there's a lot of, I'll just type whatever and I'll fix it later, because you're typing so fast. So I feel like just sort of the process of writing by hand helps me be a little bit more deliberative.
Do you find it helps you connect with the words better? Do you think that it, writing by hand, does it slow you down, or does it make you really, really think more about the meat, the undercurrent of the story?
Yeah, I mean, it does slow you down for sure. You just can't, you know, even if you're a fast hand writer, you can only write so fast. So it definitely forces you to, you know, sort of put on the brakes a little bit and, you know, consider kind of the next thing that's coming out.
Yeah, 'cause I just the sound of the pen across the paper sometimes acts as I don't want to say a hypnotizing effect, but there's something about the rhythm of the pen across the paper that sort of anchors your that part of your mind that's pulling out pieces and making up the story. It just connects deeper or connects faster to me. I don't know how to explain that.
I do think you're right in that there's like a little bit of a deeper connection. I know there have been a lot of studies done. I hate to cite things without sources, but I know there's been a lot of studies done that have shown that like writing by hand literally activates a different part of your brain. You know, the physicality of writing does something in your brain that's a little bit different from just typing the words. So obviously that's working for me.
Well, we will let people discover the ghost tree for themselves and go on that journey. No spoilers here, but you also enjoy other forms of storytelling and decided to create a podcast where you could talk about them. Talk about that a little bit.
Oh, actually, that was more. So, a very old friend of mine who I'd been friends with since I was in high school had a movie podcast. It's called TMI, Confessionals of the Nerd Kind. And they started out with five people. And by the time I came on, they'd sort of whittled down to two people. and I was listening to they had done some reviews of The Mandalorian, the television show. They had done these mini episodes reviewing, and I said, "Hey, I love samurai movies, and there's a ton of samurai influences in Mandalorian. Like, if you want, like, I can pop on for one episode and talk about samurai movies." And then I just sort of attached myself like an alien face hugger, and I never left.
That is the very nature of podcasts. Someone chimes in with a really strong opinion or perspective on a topic, and they never go away.
Yeah, that was pretty much me. So every week we do, normally in times when there's a lot of new movies being released, we review a new movie that's out, and then we attach a second movie that's sort of somehow thematically related. So it's sort of like a drive-in format, a double feature. And it's been a little challenging because there hasn't been a lot of new films coming out, obviously, in the last few months. So we did a few different sort of themed things with older features, and I came up with this really fun thing where we would actually review films from from certain summers. So we did summer of 87, we did summer of 84, we did summer of 85. This week we are actually able to review a new movie because Relic was out. But it's been a little bit challenging with no new films, but hopefully that'll change in the future.
Pretty soon, hopefully. So other than talking movies on podcasts, what else are you working on currently that you can talk about?
So actually, it's funny because I have 13 books out now, but I've written 16. I have three books sort of in the queue, waiting to come out. Ghost Tree in September, Near the Bone, which comes out in spring of 2021, and then a Sleepy Hollow story, which will be out in fall of 2021.
Cool. Cool. Well, we will definitely keep our eyes out for those when they come out. And again, I recommend fans of horror and coming of age adventures to check out Ghost Tree. Christina, where can people find you online?
You can definitely find all my contact information, all my various social media accounts on my website, christinahenry.net. And I am on Facebook, facebook.com, author Christina Henry. It's so funny, I'm saying that, and I'm not really sure if that's true, but I'm pretty sure it's true. My Twitter handle is capital C underscore Henry underscore author, and I'm on Instagram as well as author Christina Henry. But you can definitely go to my website and see all the information about upcoming releases and all my various social media accounts if you want to connect there.
Cool. Well, Christina, thank you for this wonderful story and for taking the time today to talk about it.
Thank you so much for having me. This was really, really fun. I'm glad that you like the Ghost Tree because that book means a lot to me. So it's really been rewarding to hear from like some early readers who say that it's connected with them.
Yeah, it's definitely enjoyable. I stayed up one night, I think, past 3:30 in the morning.
Oh, wow.
I think that's when the iPad bounced off my forehead. But
Then you're like, okay, enough, right? You gotta go
it's
to
like, okay,
bed.
put it here and I'll pick it up in the morning when I wake up. But yeah, this one's a lot of fun. I highly recommend folks check it out. It will be out September 8th. So go grab it when you can. And again, Christina, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Escape Pod is your destination for the best in modern short science fiction. Our intrepid crew of editors and hosts will bring you fun, thought-provoking, in-flight entertainment every week as the pod careens around the multiverse. In the mood for a classic, we've got Anson Mount, also known as Captain Christopher Pike, reading Theodore Sturgeon. Want something a little more up-to-date? Jennifer R. Donahue's Surveillance Fatigue has you covered in every sense. From classic space opera to intimate character drama, from heroic alien pets waiting for their families, to herds of literal Einsteins and the benevolent conspiracy they're hatching, Escape Pod has it all at escapepod.org. So buckle up, because it's story time.
I think what I enjoyed most about the Ghost Tree is that it is part fable, part horror story. And there's something about that combination that really, really connects with what I enjoy most in a story. And I can't really put my finger on it completely yet, but when I figure it out, I will definitely talk about it. Again, Ghost Tree by Christina Henry will be out September 8th. Check it out when you can. And yes, I know I got the title of that Twilight Zone episode incorrect. It's The Monsters Are Due on Maple Street. And if you are a Repairman Jack fan, there is a short story called Recalled that is in the Quick Fixes short story collection by F. Paul Wilson. And he's actually said it is a unofficial sequel to the Richard Matheson short story, The Distributor. And I highly recommend the Quick Fixes collection if you are a Repairman Jack fan. Just saying. There's some brilliant, brilliant Jack stories in there. And Recalled is beautiful and brutal. But if you have any questions or comments about horror stories or dark fables, please give us a call. The number is 602-635-6976. Or you can send me an email, summer@writersafterdark.com. You can listen to Writers After Dark through Apple Podcasts, through Stitcher, Google Play Podcasts, and Player FM. And if you're listening on Apple or Stitcher, please leave us a review. Those reviews get other people to turn their eyeballs or their earbuds to our show so they can check it out and see if they enjoy it as much as you are. You can follow us on Twitter at Write After Dark. That's WRITE After Dark. And there is a curated creator playlist on YouTube. So youtube.com/sliceofscifi. You will see the creators and creatives playlist there. Interviews, discussions with various authors in various mediums, comics and novelists mostly for now. We'll expand into more screenwriters as well. And if you have a suggestion for something that should be on that playlist, please let me know. And of course, there is the website, writersafterdark.com. Come on by, leave a comment on this interview and any others that you might have enjoyed. And weigh in on some of the reviews that we have too. Audiobooks and novels are both covered, and graphic novels. I'd like to thank everyone who is currently supporting this show and all the others in the Slice of Sci-Fi universe. Your pledges and donations do help keep the lights on around here. If you'd like to add your support, the place to go is patreon.com/sliceofscifi. Or if you can't commit to a monthly pledge right now, the link to use is paypal.me/sci-fi summer. And again, every nickel helps keep all of this online. And just so you know, people who are Patreon supporters are eligible for perks. Got a lot of ARCs and DVDs and Blu-rays around here that need new homes. So if you're signed up through Patreon, keep an eye out. You might be the next winner. I'd like to also thank Sybin Guest and Shadon. They've provided the theme music here on this show. If you want to hear some more compositions by them, follow the links from the website. But that'll do it for this episode. See you next time. And remember, keep looking for your own stories.